famous do resemble the unfamous, but they are not the same species, not quite. The famous have mutated, amassed characteristics, refinements or corporeal variations that allow their projected images, if not their bodies themselves, to dominate the rest of us. If you are married to a man whom thousands, possibly millions of women believe themselves to be in love with, some of them inevitably more beautiful and charming than you are, it is not a question of if, but of when. When will he be unfaithful if he hasn't been already? It isn't easy, nor is it as romantic as the magazine photographers make it look, to be the wife of a very famous, memorably handsome man. There are very few nights, even when you are together, when you don't wonder what secrets he is keeping from you, or how long he will be at home before he leaves for another shoot or another meeting in a glamorous city across one ocean or the other with some director or producer who rarely remembers your name. Marriage is a liability in the movie business, despite the public's stubborn, contradictory desire to believe that this particular marriage is different, in that it will endure, even prosper, with children and house beautiful photo essays and Vogue. There are always so many others lurking about, hoping to take my place, if only for a few days or hours. It was like being married to the president of an enormous country where nearly everyone was offering him sexual favors, ones he really wasn't scorned by anyone but me for accepting.
This is a story where we go back and forth in the history of a relationship. The protagonist is a screenwriter who meets this film star, Anthony Gregoire, after he becomes interested in a script she wrote and he wants to turn it into a film. One of the things I love about this story is that we don't know the name of the protagonist until Anthony announces the relationship on The Tonight Show. He asks Emma to marry him in front of millions of people watching, and Emma is one of those millions. So you have the reader discover the protagonist's identity in the same way as all of Anthony's fans. This really put me in her shoes, and I thought, whoa, this is what it means to fall for someone who's famous. Where'd you get the idea for this kind of moment?
My Yahoo account always ends up bringing up all these headlines for different stories, some of them about celebrities. And I think that day there was a story about Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt's breakup and the fact that Angelina Jolie was the one he ultimately left Jennifer Aniston for. And so I thought, what would it be like to be married to someone like him? And that was where I think that story began.
In another story, Clear Conscience, we meet Sasha, a highly paid consultant who is married to a man named Jim. They have a daughter. Sasha takes a job for several months in Chicago, where Jim's brother, Michael, lives. Sasha and Michael start meeting for dinner every week, and the subject of Michael's recent divorce comes up fairly often. It was a nasty divorce, and during an evening of drinks, excessive drinking perhaps, Sasha admits that maybe she isn't all that much in love with her husband. And so cue the sexual tension between the two. What I find compelling about this story is that we are looking at two people who are struggling to make peace with the choices they have made, which is a theme running throughout your book. What makes this struggle so interesting to you?
I think often what happens when you spend time with someone who maybe is the spouse of a sibling or a cousin or someone, if you get to know them, you can see why your relative found them appealing or attractive. And since Michael, the main character, is, you know, dealing with the aftermath of his divorce and trying to find someone else to date, he's very susceptible to the charms of his sister-in-law, who he's always been attracted to. And so I just thought, well, what if I make it even more complicated in that I bring in her own marital troubles that maybe Michael didn't know about. I just wanted to see what would happen when I tried to get Michael to be mindful of his feelings and also somewhat susceptible to them when he knows that the moral choice is not to flirt and go after his sister-in-law. But then she, in fact, you know, turns the tables on him to some extent too. So, but I just wanted to explore those tensions when you know that it's very much the wrong thing to do, but you're still tempted to do it anyway.
This is interesting. It sounds like when you started this story, you didn't know how it would end up.
I definitely did not. I never do. I mean, I don't think I ever know how stories are going to end when I start them.
At what point do you realize that your characters are actually writing the story themselves?
Well, if I'm lucky, it happens pretty early, but usually it's about halfway through, and I still won't know what is going to happen, but I have some sense of where I'm going.
Now, you teach writing. Let me see if I got this right. At Northwestern University, and you'll be teaching writing at Regis University in Colorado as well. And so I'm interested in what you tell students to look for when they are crafting their own stories, in particular, stories that involve a relationship between two people.
And this is something that often happens with a first draft. They are writing toward an event, and they're not sure what it is. So sometimes we'll have 12 pages of exposition, and then we have two paragraphs of scene with two characters interacting, which is where the heart of the story is. And so you have to have your two characters interacting in a specific place and in dialogue within a couple of pages. That way you get into the, I guess you could call it the story's furnace. When you see the two characters interacting, there's a relationship there. One of the characters has more power. One character has something the other character wants. And so once you reach into that tension, that's where you're going to find your story.
What can you tell us about your next project?
Well, I'm writing draft 5 of a novel that's set in central Wisconsin. It's a very character-driven novel. It's about money and also about family and small towns.
Last time we talked, about a year ago, it was about your novel Paris, He Said. It was set in a city filled with romance. You mentioned that this next book is set in central Wisconsin, which interested me because I spend a lot of my time thinking about a Midwestern voice or sense of place. What are your thoughts about trying to take a story set in the heartland and trying to give it as much appeal as a story set in New York or Paris or maybe LA?
For me, and I think for a lot of writers of literary fiction, it's all about character. And so how to make the characters so unique that they can't be anyone but who they are. You don't want types, you know. So basically, I'm always writing about the human condition. I mean, I think most of us are. It would be hard not to. Even if you're writing about aliens, you're still writing about aliens with human feelings. I think I'm just trying to find sort of the universal in the particular, which, you know, is something you've probably heard before, but I'm often thinking about that.
Christine Sneed is the author of several novels and short stories. Her latest book is The Virginity of Famous Men. One of the stories we talked about is Clear Conscience, and at WNIJ.org, you can hear her read an excerpt from that. Christine Sneed, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure.